evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C. Tanzania's main opposition party, Chadema, plans a big rally for the return of its presidential candidate, Tundu Lissu.
The rally was very successful, and it shows that our people had a sense of listening from Chadema.
President Adama Barrow of the Gambia declares a seven-day period to mourn the passing of Vice President Badara Aliou Diouf.
As it is now, is that the body is going to be kept at the mortuary, and the burial proper would be alongside all the ceremonies would be on Monday morning. Monday morning, the body would be laid at the National Assembly, where people would pay their last respect to him.
And the campaign team of Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP, says its internal polling show its candidate will win the coming presidential election.
Nigerians are almost reaching their consensus that Atiku Abubakar is the next president of the Federal Republic of Nigeria.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Tanzania, the main opposition party, Chadema, is planning a big rally for its presidential candidate, Tundu Lissu, on January 25th to welcome him from exile. Lissu, the presidential candidate of Chadema, went into a self-imposed exile in Belgium, citing an assassination attempt on his life. He announced his decision to return home following a recent meeting with President Samia Suluhu Hassan. This after Chadema's first official rally Saturday, after the president lifted a ban on political gatherings imposed by her predecessor, deceased President John Magufuli. For more on Chadema's plans, I read John Rema. He is the party's director of protocol, communications and foreign affairs.
The rally was well attended by thousands of people of Mwanza. The rally was very successful, and it shows that our people had a sense of listening from Chadema, and they didn't show up. So my first reaction is that even the police, for the first time I can say that the police did give us a very good cooperation. They did attend our rally and give us security. So for the first time they did show that they are non-partisan for today. I don't know for tomorrow, but for today, the police, they had done their good job.
You have organized your first rally. Other rallies planned?
Yes. Today we are in Mwanza, and tomorrow afternoon we'll be in Serengeti region. We are having another rally tomorrow in Mara region, in Musoma town. And the next day we'll be in Tarime region, in Mara as well. So we are planning to have a series of rallies. And on 25th of this month, our presidential candidate, Honorable Tundu Lissu, who flew to Belgium, is returning home after.
Are you planning a big welcome for him? And if I may ask you, is this safe for his return?
We are planning a very big welcome. And when he arrived in Dar es Salaam, we are organizing a rally. So we will, the moment he landed up in Dar es Salaam at around 13 hours, we'll take him straight to a rally, a public rally, which will be organized in Dar es Salaam in Temeke district. So we are organizing a very big welcome for him.
Talking about the police being impartial and being non-partisan, are there any commitments from the government that Tundu Lissu will be protected, he will be secured if he returns?
We have a commitment from the government, and this commitment was announced by the Minister of Internal Affairs, who is responsible with the police services, he announced in the parliament that Tundu Lissu, when he will return back, he will be safe. So we are assured that if the Minister for Home Affairs did commit that, and also the president herself, she said there is no need for them to stay outside of the country because everything is okay now. So this, we are taking this as a commitment. Although we are very cautious because no investigation has been done by the government. Nobody has been arrested. Nobody has been questioned about the Tundu Lissu assassination attempt. And the premises where Tundu Lissu was living, there was CCTV cameras. And those cameras were taken by the police. So the police, they can detect and they can know for sure who did that. But until today, no investigation, nothing has been done. So we are very cautious about it.
Has Chadema raised some of these issues you are talking about with the authorities?
Yes, we have written a letter to the Inspector General of Police about this. And also this issue was raised during our negotiation meetings with the government, with the ruling party. So everything is on the table that these issues should be dealt with so that should never happen again against anybody, not only Chadema members, but against anybody in this country.
John Mrema is Chadema Party's Director of Protocol, Communications and Foreign Affairs. He spoke with me from Tanzania's commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA. In the Gambia, President Adama Barrow has declared a 7-day period to mourn the passing of Vice President Badara Aliou Diouf. The former vice president's death, official reports say, occurred in India where he was receiving medical attention. Information Minister Lamine Quinijame says the deceased vice president's body, which arrived on Saturday evening, will be laid in state in parliament on Monday to allow citizens to pay their last respects. The funeral will then proceed as scheduled. For more on the death of the Gambian vice president, I reached Information Minister Lamine Quinijame in the Gambian capital, Banjul.
Rightly, the body arrived last night in the early part of the evening, around 5:30 to 6 o'clock. And the program, as it is now, is that the body is going to be kept at the mortuary, and the burial proper would be alongside all the ceremonies would be on Monday morning. Monday morning, the body would be laid at the National Assembly, where people would pay their last respect to him, and prayers would be offered. All the official ceremony would be done there. Then finally, the body would be transported to Lamin, his settlement, where the burial would be done.
The president said he reposed so much confidence in his vice president, who represented the president here in Washington at the U.S.-Africa Leadership Summit. Now, how are people reacting to his death so far?
The reactions are very shocking. People have been shocked with the demise of the vice president. As you have rightly said, he had been a high caliber citizen among citizens whose dedication and loyalty to the state and to the leadership have not been questioned anywhere. His competence, his commitment in nation building is one appreciated almost by everybody. Despite the political divide, he is respected by everybody. So the demise of the vice president has really been a very shocking one nationwide. Consequently, the president had declared 7 days mourning in respect of the demise of the vice president. So that is the situation. Everybody has really felt it. Despite, without segregation, Peter, everybody has felt this very bad, very, very bad.
What really happened to him before his death? Some people are speculating that perhaps he was ill. Others are saying they didn't know he was ill.
What we know officially is that he had died after a short while sickness and treatment in India. All right. But then looking at the man, sometimes you tend to accept that, yes, you know, some sicknesses may be with people, they wouldn't make you fall down, but you can still be going and coming with them. Despite his commitment, this may be something in him, all right? But then officially what had been reported is that he had died after a short while sickness. He had been on his feet. He had been walking until the time that he was transported to India to receive treatment there. So that even if he had any sickness, this might be a mild one that he had been going and coming with.
What is the laid down procedure per the constitution to his replacement? Because obviously the government might still proceed after his burial and the mourning period.
That is entirely the prerogative of the president, as it is laid down in the constitution. He appoints every member of parliament. So this is entirely his domain, and inshallah, with guidance, the president, that is what we are praying for him to have the guidance in the appointment of another guy who would be equally as suitable as the former vice president of the republic, Badara Aliou Diouf.
So what is the message here to the people of the Gambia following his demise, Mr. Information Minister?
The message that the office of the president has sent to everybody is that there would be 7 days mourning, and this the Gambian people have taken very well. People are offering him prayers near and far, of course accepting the reality that it is a day that would inevitably come to every living being. So that when you lose somebody like him, all what remains in your ability is to pray for him. And this, the Gambian people are doing very well these days. They are offering the best of prayers they can for Allah's forgiveness for his soul and for his admittance into Jannah, the best of Jannah for that matter.
Lamin Quinjame is the Gambia's information minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Banjul. The European Union is expressing concern that the coming February general election in Nigeria may not be held in some parts of the country due to insecurity. Civil society and security analysts have also expressed similar concerns about safety risks, which they said could hamper the ability to organize and administer the vote. They cite instances of politically related attacks, including the destruction and looting of some offices of the Independent and Electoral Commission, or INEC, in some parts of the country. It also comes as opposition groups call on security services to provide protection for their candidates, who they say are being targeted by unknown assailants. This despite assurances from INEC that the vote will proceed across the West African country. For reaction to concerns about insecurity and latest development, I reach Ibrahim Momo, a political analyst based in the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
Just yesterday, in the coastal state of Rivers, there was a case of gunshots and an explosion at the rally of the gubernatorial candidate of the ruling party in that state. The ruling party in Nigeria, the APC, the gubernatorial candidate Tunde Ko, the rally they had in Port Harcourt, the River State capital, there was reported cases of sporadic gunshots and explosion. So the alarm raised by the EU team lead supporting democratic governance in Nigeria, Rudolf Ebeling, is something that, you know, brings, you know, increased focus to the challenge of electoral violence. So first, I welcome their intervention, because it now means strange, it now becomes something that is topical. Everybody's not talking about it. So it's a welcome development for me.
But Ibrahim, the chairperson of the Electoral Commission, Professor Mahmoud, said he doesn't envisage anything happening that will undermine or thwart efforts to organize elections throughout the Federation. Yet, a lot of people are also expressing concern that the violence or politically related violence appears to be increasing, citing the recent attack on Ikenga Ugo Chinyere, who was attacked by unknown gunmen and all that. Is this a major concern to Nigerians in the run-up to the elections?
Well, I think I applaud INEC's optimism, and it's not unfounded. If you remember, if you recall, in a sub-national election, off-season election in Anambra State, in the southeastern region of Nigeria, the same region that Ikenga Ugo Chinyere was said to have been attacked, there was an election that held last year in Anambra State, where Professor Chukwuma Soludo, former CBN governor, central bank governor, was elected governor in that state. In the run-up to the election, there was several cases of violence and threat by the separatist group Independent People, IPOB, separatist group IPOB. But just a few days, I think about 3 days to the election, IPOB withdrew their threats, the elections held, and the governor was elected. The only thing that came out of the election, of that threat of violence in the run-up to the election in Anambra State, was that there was a record low turnout. It was recorded that only 11% of registered voters came out for the Anambra elections. So more than the fact that INEC's optimism that going by its previous experience, going by experience that there's likely going to be elections and all these cases of insecurity might ease out or might ebb out just before the election, going by what has happened in the past. I think the fact that it also impacts on the level of voter turnouts, as we saw in the case of Anambra, which is a record low. Nigerians have never had a kind of election where only about 11% of registered voters came out.
Ibrahim, there are thresholds for which a person who is declared the winner of the presidential election must meet. With this problem or suspicion that elections might not hold in some part of the country, will this not affect the determination of who wins the presidential election?
Yeah, it will, without doubt. In the southeast region of Nigeria, there are five states, well, the subnationals are called states in Nigeria. There are five states, Anambra, Abia, Enugu, Ebonyi, and Imo states. Those five states, for a candidate to be declared president, he has to win, or she has to win at least, he has to get at least 25%, a quarter of the votes cast, in two-thirds of the constituencies. There are 36 states in Nigeria, and the federal capital is a constituency to the 37th, to say Abuja, the federal capital territory. So a candidate must win at least one quarter of the votes cast in not less than 25 states in Nigeria. Now, if you now have a thing whereby at least five states will be affected, and then that challenge extends to other sections of the country, then we are in for a kind of constitutional crisis.
Ibrahim Momo is a Nigerian political analyst. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. Still in Nigeria, the campaign team of the main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP, says its internal polling shows its candidate will win the coming presidential election. Former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, the team says, is uniquely qualified to find solutions to the challenges facing Nigeria. Kola Ologbodiyan, spokesperson for the Atiku campaign team, says the former vice president is the only candidate who has federal executive experience who can ensure good governance on his first day as president. But critics say his prospects could be derailed by an apparent lack of unity, as well as an anticipated spirited challenge from Peter Obi of the Labour Party and Asiwa Jubola Ahmed Tinubu from the governing All Progressive Congress, or APC. For more on the reasons why the PDP campaign team feels confident about the coming general election, I reached Kola Ologbodiyan.
Nigerians are almost reaching the consensus that Atiku Abubakar is the next president of the Federal Republic of Nigeria. And the reason for this consensus is simple. The All Progressives Congress has fatally failed Nigerians, either in party politics or in governance. And as such, Nigerians are looking at a new direction. And this direction is Atiku Abubakar.
But recent polls show that Peter Obi of the Labour Party is set or is the man to beat the election in Nigeria. What's your take?
My take is very simple. There are so many assumptions and there are so many polls that you hardly know which to take or whom to believe. But one thing is certain, and that certainty lies in the fact that Atiku Abubakar is one name and his political party is one denomination that is known across every polling unit in Nigeria. He's a candidate that contested the election in 2019, the last election, which was generally believed that he won that election. And given the situation the nation has found herself, where the current government and its party, the All Progressives Congress, is believed to have failed, Nigerians are looking back at that period of prosperity when President Olusegun Obasanjo and Atiku Abubakar as vice president ran the affairs of Nigeria and led the nation from the brink of a collapse under the military to a season of prosperity under a civilian administration. And the nostalgic feeling of that season, of that time, is what is currently running among Nigerians.
Festus Keyamo has filed a case against your presidential candidate, accusing him of money laundering and other charges. Some even say he should be disqualified from contesting in the election. What do you make of those allegations against your presidential candidate?
If you know, first and foremost, if you know Festus Keyamo very well, and if you understand his antics, it will not bother you that he's going to court. In time past, particularly between 1999 and 2003, he went to court against the candidate of the All Progressives Congress, that's Asiwaju Bola Ahmed Tinubu, and charged that he be removed from office on account that he forged certificates. What was the outcome? What was the decision of his going to court? It's a regular feature on the side of Festus Keyamo to jump at any opportunity and see what he can draw out of it. Just like he has failed in time past, his current action is bound for failure.
What do you say to those who are of the view that there could be a runoff? What makes you so confident that there wouldn't be a runoff, looking at how competitive this election is expected to be?
The competitiveness is neither here nor there. You can't handle it. You can't find it. You can't locate it. The competitiveness is rather on the pages of newspapers and among bookmakers. It's not the reality on the ground. The reality on the ground shows clearly that Atiku Abubakar will win this election at the first ballot. And we'll wait and see whether this will be proven wrong. We are confident in our party because we know it as a fact. We understand the feelings of Nigerians out there. We are not talking about people who sit in the comfort of their rooms and make polling and bring it to the public and say this is what is happening. We are not working with that. We are working with what we are getting from the field, from the people who are going to vote. Nigeria, as we speak today, is in a totally bad shape. And as such, Nigerians know who took them to that situation. And there's no way they will elect them. And for the other parties who are just converging for votes, who have no experience in national politics, who have never participated in presidential election, who are coming to the main, main, mainstream politics for the first time, they will soon discover that the election day scenario is different from what is read in their books and on the pages of newspapers.
Kola Ologbodiyan is the spokesperson for the Atiku Abubakar campaign team. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. In Burkina Faso, France appears to be unpopular among young people, according to Dauda Emil Wadrago, national coordinator for the international NGO Stand for Life and Liberty. He says there is also growing support for a review of economic and bilateral relations between Ouagadougou and Paris. His remarks come after supporters of the military regime protested in the capital Ouagadougou, demanding the removal of French troops in the West African country. For more on the protest, I reached Dauda Emil Wadrago.
The terrorism attack is a lot in Burkina Faso. And since the cooperation, the military cooperation and partnership with France, we never seen France soldiers who is in the Burkina Faso help Burkina Faso fight against terrorism. That's the first one. And the second one, a lot of countries around Burkina Faso, like Mali and like in East Africa, we see the international forces who came in Africa, they say they fight against terrorism, but usually we see during a lot of years, they don't get a result. The terrorism grows and the people continue to be killed. So now we think about if you want to help us and the result is not fair about this fighting, we have to change a partnership.
Is that the reason why Russia is becoming popular in Burkina Faso?
Russia is not the solution for Africa, because the solution Africa is supposed to come from African people and from African countries. We are rich, we have all the potential economic power that we can grow ourselves and to become a power continent. So that's a main point that I want to keep on my side. But when the people choose Russia, because they choose Russia because it's easy to have a partnership with Russia. Russia don't want to say, okay, when you come to my to do partnership with them, you have a condition to follow before I give you the arm or before I give you the weapons to fight against a group. That's the main point. But when you go for another countries, they put you in the condition. You have to do that before we go with you with the partnership.
Why do you think France is becoming unpopular in Burkina Faso? Because obviously, there have been, you know, since independence, a strong relationship between Burkina Faso and France. So why is France becoming unpopular now?
France become unpopular because France put on the table some condition when they do partnership with the all colonized countries. You know what I mean? Especially in the economic partnership, France have a lot of opportunities. They keep a lot of benefits than the African people. So with the social media now, the African people, especially the young people, they wake up now. They read the people, they read the history, they read, they follow the actualities and the news, and they know what happened when the state do partnership with France. For example, economic partnership like with Group Bolloré, with Sitarai, they see a lot of opportunities, a lot of advantage that France take from the people. You understand? Is why France became very, very unpopular in West Africa.
Do you think the military junta in Ouagadougou will listen to or take into consideration caused by its supporters to kick out France in Burkina Faso?
Recently, the Captain Traoré, who is the president in power in Burkina Faso, he said they want to revisit, they want to revise the partnership that we have with France. Okay? Because one of the key points that the people want, the people want sovereignty. And you can't have a sovereignty when you have another country army in your country. Okay? And you can have a sovereignty when you can decide by yourself how you want to conduct your destiny. You can have a sovereignty when you have someone who have to put you in the situation that you don't have another choice that to deal with them. That's the point right now.
Dauda Emile Wadraigo is a Burkinabe and the national coordinator for the international NGO Stand for Life and Liberty. He spoke with me from New York. This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, the World Food Programme and Madagascar government have launched an innovative green energy project to help rural communities develop their economies and withstand climate shocks. VOA Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Madagascar is famous for its flora and fauna, as well as its inclement weather. The northern and central parts of the country are subject to cyclonic rains, while drought conditions prevail in the south. The World Food Programme reports more than 2.2 million people in the southern regions suffer from food insecurity, leading to high rates of chronic malnutrition among children under five. To alleviate this situation, WFP and the government have launched the so-called Rapid Rural Transformation Initiative in two southern regions, Androy and Anosy. Hot and dry weather is the norm in these regions, so is the abundance of sunlight. That, says WFP spokesman Thompson Feary, makes them ideal for establishing solar-powered hubs, a sustainable water source, and information and communication technology. Speaking from the Madagascar capital, Antananarivo, Feary says the project will provide essential services such as energy, water, and digital platforms to communities in remote areas.
I visited two of those villages, serving upwards of 2,500 villagers in a very environmentally responsible and sustainable manner. Now, these hubs as well are providing digital classrooms for learners. I saw young people. We are nurturing dreams there.
He says the solar-powered hubs allow various partners to set up integrated community services, such as training centers for women and young people. He says he has seen communities brought together by technology.
We've brought connectivity. We are enhancing agricultural productivity. We are going to hone people's business skills. And we're giving opportunities to people, especially women and the youth, so that they can start embarking on their own enterprises.
Feary calls the project a game changer. For example, he notes women in villages in the south who previously were unable to consult medical practitioners now can do so through the digital hubs. He says the initiative is making it possible for people in remote communities to stand on their own two feet without waiting for handouts from the international community. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Direct from Washington, the Voice of America, VOA.
The French news agency AFP reports that the United States yesterday hailed the withdrawal from northern Ethiopia of Eritrean forces whose presence had been viewed as a key stumbling block in a landmark peace deal with rebels. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke Saturday with Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed regarding the significant progress to date on implementation of the November 2 agreement signed in South Africa between the warring parties, including the ongoing withdrawal of Eritrean troops from northern Ethiopia. Under the accord, the rebel Tigray People's Liberation Front agreed to disarm and to recognize the authority of the government in Addis Ababa. In return, Ethiopian officials agreed to reopen Tigray to communications, electricity, humanitarian assistance, and other services. A statement by the U.S. Department of State says the secretary welcomed the development, noting that it is key to securing a sustainable peace in northern Ethiopia and urged access for international human rights monitors. The secretary affirmed to the prime minister the commitment of the United States to support the African Union-led peace process in northern Ethiopia. The two also discussed the need to bring an end to ongoing instability in the Oromia region. Join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. We begin the sport in Algeria, where the African Nations Championship is taking place. Former African Nations Championship winners Libya registered their first win at the ongoing tournament in Algeria when they saw off Ethiopia 3-1 in their final group match in Annaba on Saturday. The victory at the 19th May 1956 stadium ensured that the Mediterranean Knights, who had already been eliminated from the competition, leapfrogged the Walia Ibex to finish third in Group A. In other games played on Saturday, Mozambique were beaten by host Algeria 1-0, but despite the loss, the Mambas qualified to the quarterfinals with 4 points after three games. This is the first time that Mozambique have progressed to the knockout stages of the CHAN. In Sunday's matches, the Taranga Lions of Senegal are up against the Leopards of DR Congo in what is likely to be a thrilling Group B fixture in the Algerian city of Annaba. A draw could see Senegal advance, while only a win will help the Congolese to progress to the knockout stages of the competition. In the other match, Ugandan Cranes will clash with the Elephants of Cote d'Ivoire in their final Group B match at the Nelson Mandela Stadium in Algiers, with the Ivorians chasing a win, while a draw will be enough for Uganda to progress. Head coach Micho Seredejovic is optimistic that his Ugandan Cranes will go past the Ivory Coast.
When you look at everything, every single team has ambition. We have brought ourselves on the brink of history. But nobody that competes has no right in advance to put and to plan something.
And now to athletics. Ruth Chepngetich, the 2019 World Marathon Champion, produced two amazing runs at the Kenyan Cross Country Championships, a World Athletics Cross Country Tour bronze event, to win a pair of titles within an hour at the Kenyan Prisons Training College in Ruiru on Saturday. Chepngetich sealed her maiden national cross country title, winning in 32 minutes and 56.4 seconds on Saturday. Chepngetich etched out Sheila Chepkiru to second place by 3 seconds as the 2021 World Under 20 3,000 meters champion Zena Jemutai from North Rift clocked 33 minutes 06.5 seconds for third place. In the men's category, Charles Katul Lokur edged past Isaac Kibet just before the finish line to win in 29 minutes 16 seconds, both men being given the same time.
Yes, the race was very tactical, but I was prepared well, and I am determined, so I'm happy to win this race today.
Lukir, who earned team bronze in the under 20 race at the 2019 World Cross, will now turn his attention to the Surikawa Classic on the 4th of February. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. After more than 2 years break owing to COVID, the World Davos Economic Forum convened last week for one week sessions, perhaps to renew contacts and to plan new networks. 52 heads of state and almost 600 chief executive officers of major corporations were in attendance, not attempting to minimize the importance of these meetings. It should be noted, however, that this is an elite group of the major industrial powers and corporations. It is therefore understandable that at the outset the major focus was on a bleak report issued by the International Monetary Fund few days before the meeting started. That report assessed that this year, one-third of Western economies will be in recession. However, when the Chinese vice president spoke at the forum, he gave an uplift assessment stating that China will experience growth and declared that China is open for business. It also was a shocking experience for the conference that the Secretary General of the United Nations, Guterres, surprisingly criticized the major petroleum companies for deliberately concealing their research, which showed that fossil fuel is a major contributor to the climate problem. He urged them to go do more to ease climate change. It is also necessary to note that even though the theme of the conference was to lessen the dangers of a fragmented world, the meetings, perhaps responding to a statement before the forum calling for assistance to his country, Ukraine, much time was spent in exploring how the defenses of Ukraine could be strengthened by advancing major Western advanced weapons conventional system in anticipation of a presumed Russian offensive this spring. There was also discussion as to how best to deal with the COVID issue in view of the opening up of China and the fear in the West that there might be new outburst of the COVID. Let us also be aware that while much was discussed as to how growth could be promoted and trade expanded, not much was focused on issues in the third world. In fact, it is true to say that the major concerns of the third world barely registered in these discussions. It is true that South Africa's president was invited, but he decided to stay at home to deal with pressing domestic problems. So the overwhelming lesson that should be drawn from this Davos meeting is that it is preferable, or maybe it is true to say, that the fora of the science United Nations Economic Organ, the General Assembly, and the Security Council are a preferred forum for promoting negotiations and dialogue in a fractured world. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent. From another world. Missing you, oh yeah. Missing you, oh yeah. Missing you always. Oh yeah. See, I wanna know, are you okay? Go back to send a gufunga in my brain. Homie, are you fine? Are you safe? Are you safe? This is my song every day. Oh, I wish there's a way. Can't get you see your face every day. Oh, are you thinking? Say, tell me who you say. Say, 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 say. What you say, yeah. Are you safe? Say, say. Girl, are you safe, yeah. Jagu vone da cheche. Jagu vone da cheche. Dovanda gu tauli da cheche. Love and affection, girl. Baby, jagu vone da cheche. Jagu vone da cheche. My situation. You my homie, it took up a long time. So I sing this one for you to make you feel special. Tell me, iko kukuri fine. Cause I'm dinner, I got to go to the end. And if you live, I can't wait. I can't wait for the day you be coming home. Friend from a long time. No, I'm missing you. Every day.
Tell them the lemonade's like money with the chase. doors, my Pimo doors are Kevin Gates. Thank God for your compassion and all your grace. Heaven is the peace in your heart, it's not a place. I gave him my all, I slept on the floor. I take risk anytime I step out of the door. Say me, can I do them bad, then I'm breaking the law. Anything about the money, I'm getting involved. They told me not to dream big, this thing is bigger than dreams. 10-story building, we talking a couple beams. Tough skin, go get the money by any means. Me mama motivation, my master be posting memes. Time changes, from Subin to Wabi Road. Who they want time me be, they carry load. See Canaba, Magic Diamond, and Sanji Gold. Little boy with some money, you know how the story goes.
Ah. Jealousy, I see the pain. I'm still working real hard, I'm not such a day. My future, I don't see from my love way. No, but you got tell me, I will go party. Try and low, fast and all it takes. Cause I work and don't play, cause it only pay. You know, see me in my way, don't be my money. Yeah. Tell you, little small change, if you come my way. Try and low.
I was destined to make it, whether you hate it or love it. Yes, I'm blessed, nothing you can do about it. And we know, empty barrels are always the loudest. Got myself a Lamborghini, it's dropping in August. Used to hang around the corner 2003. With Chevy Deuce, still a yard, man, you're live on the street. I remember how it hold me to sleep in the heat. Now they gotta pay me, just to sleep in a beautiful suite. I thought I told you I was gonna be one of the best. I spoke to B-High, can I get Jay on a text? That's some boss talk, and you can hate on the flex. I don't need a middleman, cause I pay all the checks. Oh, this is heaven to me, I came from nothing. All this money you see, came from rapping. Everybody follow my lead, cause I ain't stopping. Man, they say they're hotter than me, them homies capping. And hey, everything is okay, on the jet to LA. Cause I'm tempted, cause I'm late, and I'm still getting paid. What's the point when you hate, cause I got food on the plate. Think you made a mistake, and that's half of your fate. Money over, what else? Got the Mercedes for the missus. Dead wounds, but you can see the stitches. Ain't no genie granting all your wishes, you gotta work.
Let me see, I see the clip. I'm still working real hard, and I said today. My future, I don't see from my love way. No, but you got tell me, I'm a good party. Try and low, fast and holiday. Cause I work and don't play, cause it only pay. You know, see minimum wage, no be my money. Tell you little small change, if you come my way. Try and low, if I see, I see the pip, pip. Still working real hard, and I said today. I don't see from the way we but you got down me, I'm a cup of tea. Hello, fast on holiday. Oh, I can't play, but it only me. You know, see me in my way, no be my money. Any little small change, if you come my way, where I get love.
We know they ask. To the city, mula, we don't spray us. Thank God, take it, don't pay out. Okay, see, I'm ahead of them, I see what you. I'm a baller, got on me. No man fit on me, me look me, you go collect. See, I'm on a me, they lead, I see what you. I'm a baller, got on me. No man fit on me, me look me, you go collect. Chasing my friends and click. When I call them, I all pulling up. We strapped up with the guns and the swords and things. Bring hell to anybody who try to test me. I'm your dad, I'm your uncle, I'm your popsy. I be old man, no go, they call me Gen Z. Bread I see, steady giving them the multi love far. They can never near me. I smile about lover, just go. But oh, you move, don't show. I'm on my polo white, my face show. Sweet boy for life, you don't know. You're serious, babe, they worry my phone.
And that was our Sunday Music Spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Mike Hovey, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, one whose seeds have not sprouted does not give up planting. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.